It's been 8 years since the first prisoners arrived at Guantanamo Bay Detention Center in Cuba. Tonight, a group of Vancouver human rights advocates are reminding us of one Canadian prisoner who still remains there. Omar Khadr was 15 years old when he was sent to Guantanamo Bay in 2002. To this day, the Canadian government refuses to repatriate him. Gail Davidson is speaking about Omar Khadr's situation at a public forum tonight. Gail is the Executive Director of Lawyers Rights Watch Canada and a member of Lawyers Against War. I spoke to Gail earlier today. First off, can you remind us of who Omar Khadr is and how he ended up in Guantanamo Bay?
Omar Khadr is a Canadian citizen who, as you said in your introduction, was captured by the Americans in a small place in Afghanistan, July 27th, 2002, by the U.S. military operating under the sobriquet of Operation Enduring Freedom. When he was captured by the U.S. Armed Forces, he had two gaping holes in his chest caused by being shot twice in the back by a U.S. soldier. Photos available on the Toronto Star website appear to indicate that Khadr was shot when lying unconscious and partially covered by the rubble of a collapsed building. The building and the five or six people in them had been the object of a four-hour military assault by approximately 50 U.S. ground troops assisted by aerial support. Now, even though it was such a long time ago, Tiffany, information is still leaking out. The current information seems to indicate that a U.S. soldier entering the flattened buildings after the assault shot and killed the one person seen to be alive, and apparently they weren't aware of Khadr until a soldier stepped on him and then shot him twice in the back.
How did a Canadian citizen like Omar Khadr end up in Afghanistan?
He ended up in Afghanistan, I think, in company with family members, specifically his father. But that's not really of very much importance because it's not illegal for, it wasn't then and it isn't now illegal for a person to be in Afghanistan.
And since Omar Khadr was captured, he was transferred to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. What have the past 7 years been like for him?
Yes, he was first imprisoned at the notorious Bagram Air Base prison, U.S. prison in Afghanistan, and then sometime around the end of October of 2002, he was transferred to Guantanamo Bay. Now, the evidence of his treatment at Guantanamo Bay, of his torture and of him being subjected to torture and other prohibited treatment prohibited by the Convention Against Torture and the Geneva Conventions has been known for a very long time. And some of the treatment that he was subjected to is he was subjected to something that the type of torture that the U.S. call the Frequent Flyer Program. That's a program of extreme sleep deprivation whereby the prisoner is moved approximately every 3 hours to a different location so that they, over a period of consecutive days, and it's considered torture when it's used as a punishment or an inducement to cough up information during interrogation. When that sleep deprivation is used over several consecutive days, in the case of Mr. Khadr, the U.S. used it on him over a period of 3 weeks. They used it on him for the specific purpose of making him more amenable to talk to Department of Foreign and International Affairs officials, Canadian officials, who were coming to Guantanamo Bay to interrogate him. Now, some of the other treatment that he's been subjected to that's considered illegal is shackled in stress positions for a long period of time, forced to perform painful exercises when he's short shackled, kept in isolation in extremely cold temperatures. This is an interrogation technique approved by then Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld as environment manipulation. He's been threatened with various things, including rape, been kept in isolation for long periods of time, kept in environments with the electric light on for continuously, and so on. In 2005, he didn't have any access to a lawyer until November of 2004, over 2 years after he was captured. And those lawyers filed habeas corpus proceedings in a U.S. court on his behalf, and they filed a declaration in those proceedings setting out what his some of the details as they knew them from a few visits with him of his treatment. One of the things that they filed was the declaration of a fellow called Dr. Eric Turpin, who's a specialist in treating victims of torture. His declaration said that Mr. Catter was suffering from symptoms consistent with post-traumatic stress disorder suffered by victims of torture and other abuse, and that he was a likely candidate for suicide, and that was way back in 2005.
Is this sort of treatment legal, especially for someone who is not an adult?
No, it's not. Of course, it would be extra illegal if there could be such thing to treat a child that way, but it's actually utterly illegal to treat an adult that way.
What do you think the long-term impacts of his treatment will be on him?
It's impossible to say. The International Committee of the Red Cross, in a report, February 2004 report that was leaked when the ICRC first started to warn about the type of torture and abuse that was being that prisoners in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay were being subjected to, they expressed the opinion then that the treatment was likely to cause significant physical and mental damage that could be permanent. So I don't have any way of being able to intelligently say how this would affect Mr. Catter. Safe to say that he's been in the two most horrifying prisons that we know of for a period of 7.5 years continuously.
Do we know anything about his guilt or innocence, or whether, you know, he really did do anything during that battle in Afghanistan?
Well, we do know one thing that I'll start with. We know that Mr. Catter is at law considered innocent. All of us are considered innocent until proven guilty. And so we have to look at Mr. Catter in that light. We can't say, well, oh, somebody said he had a nasty family, or somebody said he was in Afghanistan and that was a silly place to be, particularly when the U.S. were illegally bombing and invading the place, and therefore perhaps it's his own fault. That's not how our system of law works, and that's not how international law works. Now, to go back and look at the actual charges against Mr. Catter, no charges at all were ever laid until November of 2005. So there he was, languishing in Guantanamo Bay for a period of over 3 years before any charges were laid. And the charges that were laid at that time were four crimes. They were conspiracy, murder by an unprivileged belligerent, attempted murder by an unprivileged belligerent, and aiding the enemy. Now, I can just tell you, first of all, that the term unprivileged belligerent was just another one of the Bush administration's constructs in order to create a group of people that were sort of non-legal persons that didn't have any rights, because it doesn't have any meaning in law. So, for example, in the military assault on this compound where Catter was found, the U.S. would be claiming combat immunity for all of their on-the-ground soldiers and all of their in-the-air people, but saying somehow or other Mr. Cotter, if he did do anything, didn't have any combat immunity. Now, in fact, that's not how the laws of war work. In the laws of war, it isn't murder to kill somebody in the course of combat, kill another armed combatant in the course of combat. It is, however, considered murder to kill somebody who's, or attempt to kill somebody who's unarmed. So if you look at the Toronto Star pictures, it appears that Mr. Cotter was shot not only when he was unarmed, but when he was unconscious, and he was shot twice in the back. Now, an example of that being a criminal offense is in Canada. There's a Canadian Armed Forces member by the name of Semra who has been prosecuted for shooting an unarmed prisoner in Afghanistan. Now, anyway, there's a lot more that I could say. He's had new charges laid since then, so, but I don't know if you'd like to me to talk about that anymore or not.
Sure, maybe if you could just quickly summarize what sorts of charges have been laid against him.
Well, see, what happened with the November 2005 charges, before those charges could be heard, the United States Supreme Court, in a case called Hamden versus Rumsfeld, held that the military commissions created by an edict announced by George Bush in November of 2001 violated U.S. law and the Geneva Conventions and were illegal. So in order to circumvent that ruling, if they were going to abide by it, the U.S. would have just moved everybody, the trials of everybody, into regular U.S. courts. The U.S. government enacted the Military Commissions Act in October 2006, and in early 2007, Mr. Cotter was charged with five crimes under that act, and those crimes are murder in violation of the laws of war, attempted murder in violation of the laws of war, conspiracy, providing material support for terrorism, and spying. Now, there's lots and lots of problems with the evidence and with the charges themselves. As far as the evidence is concerned, it's, as far as I know, is pretty much collapsed as a result of the patchy disclosure that defense counsel's been able to obtain. The prosecution for murder by an unprivileged belligerent was based on and apparently supported by a report of Cotter's capture that we now know had been falsified to indicate that Cotter threw a hand grenade that killed a U.S. soldier. The original incident report that was disclosed in early 2008 indicates that the person who threw that grenade was killed. So I don't know what actual evidence there is to support those charges. In addition, there's problems with the charges themselves because all the charges against Cotter, all these 2007 ones, can be considered as ex post facto charges. In other words, charges invented or created after the acts were alleged to have been committed. So in other words, Cotter's alleged to have done these things in either in 2002 or before 2002, and the charges and the crimes were created by the Military Commissions Act in October of 2006.
So despite having all these problems with this evidence against Omar Cotter, the Canadian government still continues to refuse to repatriate him.
Exactly.
Why is that?
That's a matter for speculation. I don't know, but it certainly appears that the Canadian government is probably worried about the type of disclosure that would occur if Cotter were to be released and repatriated to Canada. Two courts have now ordered the Prime Minister, the Director of CSIS, the Commissioner of the RCMP, and the Minister of Foreign Affairs to request that the U.S. release and repatriate Mr. Cotter as soon as possible. And that's the federal court and the Federal Court of Appeal, both Canadian courts. And they've based those extraordinary orders on reviewing the evidence of Mr. Khadr's, the violation of his rights, the evidence of the illegality of his detention, the evidence of the illegality of the military commission's procedures that before which he's obliged to have his charges determined, and also they've considered Canada's complicity in his torture and come to those decisions. The Special Parliamentary Committee on the Omar Khadr case in June of 2008 also reviewed all of the relevant facts and applicable law and came to the same conclusion. They recommended that the Harper government secure Khadr's act to secure Khadr's release and repatriation. In March of 2009, Parliament passed a resolution supporting that recommendation and calling on the government to act to release and repatriate Omar Khadr.
And still Stephen Harper refuses.
Yes.
In December, U.S. President Barack Obama announced he'd be moving Omar Khadr and other Guantanamo Bay prisoners to a facility in Illinois. Can you tell us what's happening with that plan?
That plan, like a lot of the Obama administration plans, has collapsed. Last year, Obama announced two things, that within the first year of his presidency, he would be closing Guantanamo Bay Prison, and he was rejecting the military commissions that had been discredited by everybody. And in fact, now we know that Guantanamo Bay is not going to be closed, and the military commissions are not going to be scrapped. They've in fact been revived. They were revived by the passage in November of the National Defense Authority Act, I think it's called. So they're sort of the same military commissions, a bit amended. And then in December, after announcing that the announcement that they were going to be transferred to a prison in Illinois, a prison called the Thompson Correctional Center, that plan is now also stalled for the foreseeable future because the Congress has refused to fund the 8 to 10 months of renovations that are said to be necessary prior to any prisoners being transferred there.
Now, Gail, what is the likelihood of Omar Khadr actually coming back to Canada or being able to face a fair trial?
Absolutely none, I would say, at the present time, principally because the Canadian government and the U.S. government have very successfully flouted the law through the entire 7.5 years of Mr. Khadr's imprisonment. And they presumably will continue to do so. Now, in that respect, for example, Obama announced some time ago that he was going to review the cases of all the Guantanamo Bay prisoners that had been charged and decide whether they would be tried by regular U.S. courts or released and repatriated. Well, then he added a new category of Guantanamo Bay prisoners that would be tried by revived military commissions. And Mr. Khadr is Mr. Khadr's lawyers made submissions, sent submissions. They were not able to make submissions because nobody was allowed at the hearing, and we don't even know what kind of a hearing or review was held. But they sent submissions to the U.S. government asking that if the charges were going to continue to be proceeded with, that Mr. Khadr be moved to be tried in a U.S. federal court. He's going to continue to be have his charges heard before a military commission. In addition, the Obama administration has reiterated the claim made by the Bush administration, the right to detain aliens, Mr. Khadr is considered an alien, taken prisoner in the war on terror indefinitely, irrespective of the determination of guilt or innocence. So they maintain that they have a right to detain him indefinitely. Now, you know, you might ask why, who is going to be tried before federal prisons, and they're only trying the few prisoners that they know that they will get a conviction, and they can't be sure of that with Mr. Khadr. In fact, they can be sure they wouldn't get a conviction in federal court, so he is remaining in before the military commissions.
What is it going to take to bring Omar Khadr back to Canada?
Well, it will take a lot more insistence from Canadian people. I think Canadians have been very quiet on this issue, not just members of Parliament, but Canadians in general have been very quiet on this issue. And I think that the issue is of tremendous importance to all Canadians, because if Omar Khadr can be so summarily deprived of virtually all of his rights, except for his actual life, then so anybody else can as well.
Gail, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Gail Davidson is a founding member of Lawyers Against the War and the executive director of Lawyers' Rights Watch Canada.